Make room for huge plays with the HyperX Alloy Origin 65 mechanical gaming keyboard and the Pulsefire Haste wireless mouse. The Alloy Origin 65 has a functionally compact form factor, keeping the arrow keys while ditching the numpad and the F keys. The Pulsefire Haste is the lightest wireless mouse from HyperX, featuring a robust connection and the precision you need to click heads. The Alloy Origin 65 and Pulsefire Haste Wireless, a terrific twosome to keep your setup clean and clutter-free.
Chat of the Wild is part of the HyperX Podcast Network. To find out more information and other great shows, go to podcast.hyperx.com. May the scent of fresh flowers protect you always on Chat of the Wild.
Gaiden!
In this season, we're playing through Okami, available on many systems. We're playing the Okami HD version. In the last episode, we helped restore Kamiki Village, not to its full potential. We'll find that out later. But we at least got the people turned back from stone into their fleshy normal selves.
Yeah. Collected a lot of produce. It was nice.
It is not. It's just nice.
Yeah.
It's just nice.
Yeah. There's also a the merchant that was standing in front of the boulder is now like, cool, I can go home. I should probably, you know, sell some of the stuff, you know, lighten my load a bit. So he opens up shop right by the exit to the town. So you can buy different bait and for, you know, different kinds of things to feed cute woodland creatures around the world.
Dude, feeding the woodland creatures is one of my favorite things so far. Just because you feed them and there's this little cutscene that lasts way too long, but it's so adorable. You know, the dog Amaterasu and the animals sitting there eating their snack, and it just is like this flowery scene where the camera rotates, and if it didn't take like 10 seconds too long, it would be perfect. So I just, like, watch it for a bit and skip it.
Mm-hmm. So. I always watch it for a little bit, though. Yeah.
After we cleared all this stuff up, we did have Sakia reappear and talk to us. Now, we got some closer shots of her, and I did want to mention in her design. So there's two things that she has. So it is clear this character is supposed to be very attractive, right? Her front, she has big cleavage, but and also her dress forms it in a way that it looks like a peach.
Yeah, right? Which I didn't notice the first week, but the second week, I was just like, yep, there's that middle cleavage. Uh-huh. And the second week, I was like, oh, middle cleavage is Animal Crossing peach. Okay.
And we do get in this scene, there is a shot in the back that she has a butt window.
Yeah.
That also is a peach shaped.
Third week. Yep. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And did you guys come back to this town in this episode?
Yep.
Yeah. Yeah.
We get to see even more of her later. We'll get to that, though. We can leave this here now. I wouldn't necessarily advise buying anything other than seeds right now, because we will be coming up to someone that we can spend money on. And so you're going to want to save up your money for that stuff, especially with in the combat. Let's talk a moment about the combat in here.
Okay.
It starts off super basic. We only have our flaming mirror on our back for our weapon right now.
Our reflector.
We will get more weapons later. But right now it's just that. There is a single attack move that starts off with a 3-hit combo. The other thing that you can do is you can slash enemies with the paintbrush. You can freeze, do a slash. That will hurt them.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I don't know, we will get to this later, but I think it's important to say now. You want to try to do a final slash on every enemy, because they will drop a currency. There is a monster tooth that you have. Right now, I believe you still have like a high probability of getting like the basic monster tooth. If you go and slash the enemy and cut them in half when they are in their like dying animation, you'll pick it up. And they're on your menu. It will show a different thing for that and how many you've gotten. There will be something that you get later. So take advantage of this now while you're fighting weaker enemies.
Okay.
Be sure to slash every single one right after you kill them, or at least make that the final killing blow.
Yeah.
That'll cut them in half, and they'll drop a monster tooth.
Okay, because I've gotten some of those.
It took a while for me to understand this whole setup, because when they teach you during your first fight, they say, okay, when they lose their color, you can hit them with the power slash. And I took that as that was the only way to kill monsters. So I was a little freaked out in the beginning because I thought I had to hit everyone until they were grayscale, and then I could only kill them that way, which thankfully.
Yeah, it's sort of the inverse of that, right?
Yeah.
But yeah, these battles, they take place in this small circular field. Whenever you run into enemies, they are these like floating demon scroll looking things that if you get close enough to them, if they see you, they will run at you. I do believe it does the thing later on that as you get stronger, these things will run away eventually.
Okay.
So you'll have to go out of your way to like try to fight these things later on. I may be misremembering that, but a thing you'll also be able to do in here is escape, and that you can do that by smashing. There's a spot in the circular field that is like a glowing area that if you keep smashing that, you'll basically make a hole in there and you can jump out of the field.
Yeah.
That is a way to escape.
And I didn't know that until they tell you this, we're still very much in tutorial sections of this game, where some of the treasure chests just give you a scroll that further clarifies the rules, which I didn't realize until I'd gotten a few of them to be like, oh, I basically, my reward for that wasn't really all that special. But the reason I didn't realize it till later was because I still thought it was special, because I was like, oh, that's good. I'm glad I got clarification on that rule. And it wasn't upsetting that all I got was, you know, here's more journal pieces, I guess. And
we're
yeah.
still getting money.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Sometimes praise as well. Also, in the fight, you use your ink. Anytime you use your ink and do something successfully, it will use up some of it. We start with 3 jars of ink that we can use before we run out. And bad guys will drop more of it when you kill them that will refill that. And the icon, the sprite for that ink is the exact same icon as the juice that you get in Beautiful Joe, the enemies will drop to refill your VFX meter so that you can stay in that special mode of that game's special mode. So they're basically almost one-to-one comparisons, and it's just a different color.
So Beautiful Joe came out, what, 2 years before this, I think?
So probably 2000.
Maybe a little more than a year.
2003. So, yeah, a little earlier. Yeah, it's like 3 years, pretty much.
Yeah. So after we help the town, we can go out into Shinshu Field. Now, when we first get into here, not much to do. Like, you get into there and we see the cursed land outside of here. If you step too far, everything changes around you. The first time you do it, Isun jumps in and basically says, like, oh, this kind of curse would kill any mortal. But for you, I think it's just going to be like sapping your godly power away.
Yeah.
And that's what it does.
You become normal wolf. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't believe you ever want to try to like force your way through it. I don't think there is anything. There might be something somewhere where if you get real maxed out on your ink and your god power, maybe you can force your way through one of them to get to a little secret thing. But in general, rule of thumb, don't do it, because we are going to be clearing this area out and we're going to be making it nice. There's going to be a bunch of stuff to explore then.
Yeah, I accidentally stumbled into it once and got that explanation. But yeah.
We've got another tree at the center here. Again, it has lost its power and we need to figure out what to do. Not really anything else to do in this field.
Mm-hmm. We can run into the nameless man who just like,
yeah,
he's like, I saw that dude, Susano, come running through, which is weird because usually he's running away from stuff. This time he was running towards something.
He was talking about fighting monsters, so.
Yeah.
Right. But we'll see what he's actually doing soon. If we follow this river into this cave, that takes us into Hannah Valley. And this area here, again, it's real straightforward. We're sort of just running through. There's some enemies here and there. We come across some that are like sitting at a campfire that we can fight a bunch of them at once.
Yeah, and they all play instruments, which makes me feel kind of bad because it makes me feel like I'm just beating up on some, you know, some bards, you know, just these artists sitting around like playing, you know, music together and like I gotta ruin their day, but.
At the risk of saying this kind of stuff wrong, I believe there is a lot of stories that involve these kind of creatures out in the woods playing instruments to sort of say, like, those are the noises that you're hearing when it's really just like the wind blowing through the trees, where it's like, no, it's actually this thing playing its instrument and it's calling children to it to eat or something like that, right? Like there's a lot of stories like that where they relate the sounds of nature to a creature actually playing some kind of instrument. Mm-hmm. It's beautiful in a way, if it wasn't for the kidnapping.
wasn't for the toilet demons.
As we go up here, we come across some evil trees that chuck fruit at us. And yeah. You can slash that fruit right back at them and that'll stun them. So you want to do that because these things will throw those things fast and they have a really good aim. So unless you are just like really running all the way past them, and I'm guessing you're probably not because you may not know exactly where you're going right now, right? Like you're kind of just like, I'm going up this path, but I don't know exactly where we're going.
Mm. Also teaching you to like, hey, use your ink mechanic, teaching you how to study enemies and figure out what their weaknesses. You can buffer with the ink mechanic by pulling the page up and stopping time for being like, when's he gonna throw it? Okay, now he's gonna throw it. Now I can actually slash it and
okay.
And stuff like that. So
yeah, we come across another enemy up here too, and it's one that is like playing drums. The way they do the intros, I love because it's actually very similar to the way that they do it in Bayonetta.
It's so good.
Whenever you meet a new creature in Bayonetta, it would do it like it was opening this ancient tome because you're fighting like these biblical creatures, basically. And they have this like angelic tome that opens and shows them each time. And this one actually does it in a similar way, just like a different style of it, where it does sort of a Japanese scroll style, where you just, they don't get the names in here, although they might have them somewhere. No, they don't. They just show like an old, like authentic looking Japanese drawing of these kinds of creatures, which I'm assuming are based on like actual, like, you know, mythologies and stuff, right? That's all I can do, because this is all I know. but yeah, we fight the drum ones. This one, the mechanic is a little bit different. Did you guys figure out how to get around it? Like, its weak spots?
It took a few fights against one of these.
To the best of my knowledge, his weakness is if he pops up and you're behind him, he doesn't know what to do. So
yep. And you can slash for massive damage.
Yeah.
And then get them into a spot. Because if they do know where you are, they'll pop up, be invincible to slash, and your reflector doesn't do much damage.
But they just don't do much.
They do a shockwave that you can jump over with their drum, and then they go back underground. And the way to get them to stay above ground is to pop up behind them, do some damage. Then they'll do their bazooka attack, which hits them with recoil and stuns them to where you can do another slash for really big damage. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Took me a while to like figure that out. The camera is rough because
yeah,
when moves,
they're underground, yes, and they're moving around, it's impossible to keep it locked on them. So
mm-hmm.
Yeah, they're, and just to be clear, there is no lock on in this game.
No.
That is like one of the, I think that's a problem with the game. I think that's a con for this.
It's why the battles happen in this way, is to give you a small arena to keep, you know, your eye, you can see everything you're fighting, basically. But I
think the battle system might be the worst part of the game overall. Not to say like it's okay. When I say worse, I don't mean it's like the worst thing, but right. In terms of something that we're going to be doing throughout this whole thing, the general exploring and meeting characters and solving puzzles and drawing on things and just making the world beautiful is the best thing about this game. Mm. The worst thing that you have to do constantly throughout it is fight enemies. You'll get better at it, but it's not... This is coming from the Devil May Cry people, right? This is a game from people that only knew how to do cool run from the next room to the next room, fighting enemies like crazy, juggling them in the air, bringing out multiple weapons, trying to get style points, all of this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they've toned that down severely, but it still is that kind of gameplay in the end in this tiny little arena. And they just sort of, I don't like the fact that it just takes you out of the world that you're in whenever you get into them. And it just sort of like is just like, oh, time out, battle time. All right, let's go to the battle area. Okay, good job doing the battle. Now you can go back to your adventure.
Mm.
And it just feels disconnected a lot of times to me.
One thing that's hard for me with the battles is getting to the end of a battle and thinking, okay, is everybody dead? Did I beat all the enemies? Because you don't know until it stops and tells you. And it takes right. a second before it gives you the end of battle screen. So mm-hmm. sometimes yeah. I'm in the fight and I'm just panning the camera around to make sure there's not someone lurking underground or floating up in the air that I missed.
Yeah.
You're constantly having to run in circles, basically.
Yeah.
I think the biggest thing about the camera is that it wants to move with the character when you move. And so mm-hmm. it doesn't always move the way I want it to. And especially when you're fighting in that small area, if you try and run to the left, the camera will then try and move on its own to where it thinks it should be. And I'm like, no, I need to move myself to the left, but I don't need you moving right now. You're not in the right spot. And like we said before, it helps when you go into the ink mode that you can move the camera in ink mode. So that's pretty great. But yeah, it's troublesome. I kind of like the fighting, but it's troublesome.
Yeah, the fighting itself is fine.
Mm-hmm.
It's not broken. We will get more options on how we fight later. It actually gets good in terms of you being able to pick what kind of weapon you want. I'm not going to talk about like where we go from there.
Yeah.
We get different weapons, and you get to choose at any point what you want to play as. You could stick with the mirror the entire time if you wanted to. But you'll also have other options later.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to when we get those to get your guys' opinion on it, when we're actually going to be able to have different builds.
Mm-hmm.
At some point, we will have different builds of dog, and yeah. that's great.
Yeah, but in terms of Kamiya action gameplay, that's not what this game is known for. It's not what I have heard a lot of people bring up when I've heard about this game over the years. So, yeah.
Right, yeah. As we go up here through the valley, we eventually run into Susano, and he is trying to smash open this boulder in his way again, but it's like he can't figure out how to get through this stuff. This scene I love, and this just reinforces what I believe, the thing of like, we are not the dog. We are the god behind the dog, guiding it, telling it like where it should go, and the dog will decide on its own. As Susano is talking about, like, he's just like, what are you doing here, you mutt? And the whole time the dog is just wagging its tail like crazy. It just loves Susano so much. And at this moment, like, as the player, we all know Susano's a con, right? Like, we know that, like, he's not everything that he claims to be, that he's almost, okay, Brian, he isn't this bad, but he's almost like a linebacker here. Right.
Okay.
Where he talks up himself about being so amazing, but us as the player know that he isn't. And so as a god, we know that he isn't too, but we're a god. We don't actually care how great he is. He's just going to be a tool that we use to get the stuff done
for whatever reason.
Meanwhile, this dog loves him.
For whatever reason, I like him way more than Linebeck. I am a little bit, tired of just how much Like, because there is a bit of that Chella, Linebeck, Eason, Susano. Like, there is just a lot of talking. Eason says a lot of stuff, and I'm a little tired of Eason half the time, but I like him.
Susano does that joke he's been doing numerous times now where he trips over himself, where he's like, oh, I was going here to train.
Yeah.
To practice, to fight Oni. But then he does that like back to back of saying like he's trying to find his room to hide. And then it's just like, not hide. I meant train.
Yeah. We're definitely in his training, his famous training room where he goes to take naps, right. Train.
And then, right, and Eason does the over and over, wait, did he say nap? Like, just that back and forth.
I think Eason has a lot of Ezlo energy as opposed to Chella energy. Ezlo talked a lot at the beginning of that game, and I'm hoping Eason chills out a little bit as we go through, like Ezlo did, so.
I think you will learn to love Eason more, is what will happen. He's not going to stop talking. But I think you will find him more endearing by the end.
Right.
What we need to do to move this wall out of the way is there is this slate near us that has some carving on the wall. And it very clearly has a spot for us to draw something. If we go up to there and we draw a circle for a sun, it activates this thing. And that's how this magic barrier is removed. Susano's just like, I don't know what just happened, but whatever. Gotta keep running away.
It also informs how the puzzle goes down in the next room.
Yeah, we get into this other area that you can just screw up the puzzle over and over again. Like, it doesn't necessarily tell you right away. You get into here, and this is also something that I don't know if he kept doing it, if it would tell you something else, but you get into there and you can see a slot up to the sky where you can draw a sun, and then you get a cutscene of the sunlight coming down to nothing. And then Eason says, like, I feel like we're missing something. We saw a diagram earlier of a sun coming down onto a shape that then goes to the thing. So that sort of tells us what we need here. But you're looking around, and at the time, it looks almost like there's just a locked door in front of you. There's these wood planks vertically going down that in like a Zelda game, you would solve the puzzle and then that door would open up.
I was like, well, clearly I can't slash that because it's a door. Right.
So you slash it and that's how you move on from here. Mm-hmm. BC, did you get stuck on this too?
Yeah, I was stuck on this for a while because if you go up to where the orb should be, Eason makes a comment about, like, oh, you know, there's this puddle. It looks like there was something here before. And kind of every time we've had that prompt of there was something here before, something is missing, you have to fill in the space. And I thought I was just doing something wrong or there was something wonky with the way that I was painting in the space that wouldn't let me complete the puzzle. Until I eventually was like, all right, I guess I don't get it. I'll look it up. And I hadn't even seen that door yet to slash. And I like looked at a guy and they're like, yeah, slash the door to the left. If only
That's all I had to do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It just seems so straightforward. And him saying, oh, hey, there's something missing that was here before. I immediately went with, okay,
what do I draw?
I'm supposed to rejuvenate it somehow.
Yeah. Yeah, right. Knowing whether or not there's a tell for things that we use rejuvenation on, that's helpful, because I never quite know what I'm supposed to scribble on and what I'm supposed to circle or whatever.
You'll get used to it. Okay. You'll start to, you know, as you do more and more of these things, it just becomes natural for you to... They do, over time, make this stuff more and more obvious through color and, like, effects to be like, you can interact with this thing here.
Yeah.
After we do that, we run down a hallway. There is a little save station there if you wanted to, but we're not stopping yet. You get to the end of this little path, and we meet Sleepy Bear.
Hi, Sleepy Bear.
Top five characters, hands down.
Yeah.
It's just this giant brown bear sleeping while balancing on a sphere, the sphere that we need.
Susano.
That's it.
Yeah. Susano's like, all right, you fiend.
Right. It's not doing anything. It's just asleep. And Susanoo is taking up like, ah, my ultimate nemesis. You're back again.
Sleepy bear.
We get the scene of him doing his Susanoo style explosion and implosion, where when it first started going, I was like, I don't want to slash the bear.
Same. I was like, we can't kill the bear.
We don't kill the bear. We do go through this and we do slash him. That makes the bear fall off and then immediately fall back asleep again.
And Susanoo was very surprised by all of this, but then yeah, rest in peace, foul beast.
Well, at first he starts trash talking the bear and he does the same thing where he's like, oh, I meant to, I hate the game, not the player.
Yeah.
But he does mention, he's just like, oh, my special training area has been compromised. I must go find some other new place. And he runs away.
Then Amma, the dog is kind of get that sideways head turn. Like, huh?
Does the crooked head mm-hmm. just like confused about what's going on here? Again, this is just a dog. It doesn't know what's going on.
Yeah.
It's not, the dog does not understand what's happening. With this, we just get a little physics puzzle, I'll call it, where we have to push the ball into here. Eh. It's kind of annoying.
Getting the ball up the hill is a little annoying, but yeah.
Not a fan.
No.
Yeah.
I like
we get into the slot.
Once you actually activate the puzzle, though, Isund is just like, wow, someone had a lot of time on their hands to set up this Zelda puzzle. Like, this is really... This is some Rube Goldberg unnecessary crap right here.
How great would it have been if he was just like, man, this is like from some dumb Nintendo game. We do that. We summon the sun. That actually then awakens this tree back up. And we get another of our favorite whooshing flower and green and beautiful coming back to the land, mm-hmm. going down the water. You see just this water bouncing up and down, just the waves going through it, everything just coming back to life. There was a spot when we were coming up here that after you fought some monsters, it sort of sprouted back to life and then immediately got covered back up again. If we go back down through there and fight them again, it opens them up, and this time it stays there.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we can start. We can mess around with the swimming. Did either of you guys go swimming for a little bit?
Yeah, I think there's a couple things that you can find, like on little islands. There's also outside of swimming, there's some areas as you go back down that are. There was nothing there before, and now you can find glowing spots to dig. So that mm-hmm. was like on the way up, I found this plateau that was clearly you were supposed to go there. And I'm like, why am I going to a plateau to nothing? But now I know that there's something there after you revitalize the land.
Mm-hmm.
Right. We also do get an interaction with another brush god. This is Sakigami. This is one of the, I believe, four of the like, There are these monkey gods that like each play their own instrument.
Yeah.
And I believe this is the first of, like I said, I think three or four. And this is where we are taught Bloom. So now we get another circular thing. So if you circle, like I said before, we're going to have 13 different brush strokes. At least three of them are just circles. Mm-hmm. So it's like not, you don't have to worry about all these different patterns to remember, like in Phantom Hourglass, where you had to remember the codes to write on the slate to teleport or something like that, or at least like take notes of those things.
Oh,
they're very simple in the end.
Oh,
sorry to bring it back.
Oh, I totally forgot about the slates. Oh my God. What were they thinking?
We do get it. We find a scroll that does also tell us that with the bloom, in battle, if we go into our drawing mode, if we just do a dot, it will summon a tree out of the ground it's like that you can
three
stun
dots.
Enemies or you can like distract them.
I haven't quite figured out the best application for that because sometimes it just won't grow the tree where you put it because there was a guy standing there and it covers them in ink. And I'm just like, okay.
Yeah, I've done the tree a couple times. I'm not sure how... like applicable or effective it is. It looks cool though.
With the trees that threw bad fruit at us earlier on the way up with bloom, we can now, once we stun them, we can put a circle around them and turn them into regular pretty trees. Same thing with the husks, the black husks of trees.
Right. And this is something that I love about this game is the visual representation of the things that you've done there, right? Mm-hmm. Where you can tell you've been in an area because you've got these cherry blossoms all over the place. And like you know that, okay, I've been in this corner, all that stuff there. And then every area, once you get all of those, that unlocks something special for you in each of those. Mm-hmm. So there's an incentive to be sure to do that. You can also line them up properly, you can do multiples on a single stroke.
Oh.
If you like move the camera around and just have like three back to back to each other, you just do one and it's going to hit all three at once.
Okay.
It's not like you get that ink back, so it's not a big deal, but it's just like a fun thing to do.
Yeah. Right? 'Cause I've been experimenting with what it will let me get away with on Bloom. Bloom has been not fun to use. It's fun, but sometimes it just, what it considers a circle sometimes and where it puts that circle is confusing.
I've found that you just have to go big on the circles to get it to work. As soon as I went for the bigger circle approach, it got much easier. Mm-hmm.
Got it. We're going to be going back to the field that we were at the beginning of this episode, but first we're going to take a break. When we get back, we'll talk about all the neat, cool things that are there now.
The award-winning Go Nintendo podcast is the best place to get the latest news on the world of Nintendo. We cover the biggest stories, share impressions of the latest games, and answer your burning questions. There's also some general pop culture talk, game music trivia, a heaping helping of silliness, and did I mention our robot companion?
I'm the star of the show.
Catch new episodes of the Go Nintendo podcast every Saturday on the HyperX Podcast Network.
Make room for huge plays with the HyperX Alloy Origin 65 Mechanical Gaming Keyboard and the Pulsefire Haste Wireless Mouse. The Alloy Origin 65 has a fully compact form factor, keeping the arrow keys without the numpad and function keys. The Pulsefire Haste is the lightest wireless mouse from HyperX, featuring a robust connection, up to 100 hours of battery life, and is even water resistant. The Alloy Origin 65 and Pulsefire Haste Wireless. Keep your setup clean and clutter-free with the Alloy Origin 65 Mechanical Keyboard and the Pulsefire Haste Wireless Mouse.
Need some adventure in your life? What Mad Universe is a podcast where two guys delve into the history of sci-fi, fantasy, and horror, and the impact it's had on pop culture.
Everything's the same politically, but we have ray guns.
The actual motive isn't to explore something that's, quote, scientifically possible.
But neither is Star Wars, and I know there's arguments about that, but I would definitely consider Star Wars science fiction.
You haven't read Dune!
No, I haven't.
You can never be the Kwisatz Haderach.
What Mad Universe on the HyperX Podcast Network.
It's Patreon time. Haven't done this in a little while, but you know what? We've got to celebrate. We got a new person here, Hylian Gamer. He has been hanging out with us for a while over in the Discord and just joined in and supporting us, and we greatly appreciate it.
Yeah.
We are a little late with his promo, but here we are.
Yeah, he's
do apologize.
Been a long time listener. Good to have around. He's getting that Yum Brands money, apparently. So he's been working at Taco Bell, got himself a job.
Good for him. If you sign up on our Patreon, patreon.com/Shadow of the Wild, you get a survey, you talk about your favorite Zelda games, and then we talk about it on here, and we react to it. For Hylian Gamer, for the question of what is your favorite Zelda game and why, he says, personally, my favorite Zelda game is Link Between Worlds. I love the painting mechanic, how it replicates the use of most of the overworld map of Link to the Past, and the overall gameplay. I love the story of how the game unfolds and how you have to save Hyrule. That is one I only played through it once. I remember loving it. I'm very much looking forward to us getting to that here on the show for sure.
Yeah, I beyond loved that game. I was crazy about it. I almost went back and played it again, but didn't. But like everything about that game, I remember at the time was absolutely in love with it.
You know, I'll probably bring this up again when we get to it, but I do remember not being impressed by like the first reveal of it, like the style they went with and all that stuff.
Yeah.
But then you get into it and it's like it all makes sense, it all fits, and it's so good from what I remember.
Mm-hmm. Great multiplayer too. I actually played that multiplayer a whole lot. It's like a 1v1 thing, but I had a lot of fun with that.
Oh, okay.
Stole my neighbor's Wi-Fi for that.
What is your favorite Zelda item? Highland Gamer says, my favorite Zelda item would have to be the bow. Ooh, a classic.
Is it the bow and the boomerang camp? No, you gotta... different flavors.
Yeah.
But, okay.
I know it's an item that comes early game, depending on the game, but I love the mechanics, particularly the bow from Twilight Princess on the Wii because of aiming controls. Yeah, one of my favorite things that they did with the 3DS version of Ocarina of Time and Majora's Mask is giving you gyro aiming with the bow.
Uh-huh.
Just so good. And that's the other good thing about the Wii U version as well with Twilight Princess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing that's great about the Twilight Princess one is just freely giving you bomb arrows.
Right, yeah. You could just blow up anything that you see.
Yeah. Like, oh, by the way, when what's-his-face gives you the bombs, he's like, oh, by the way, you just slap these on your arrows, man. Barnes. Mm-hmm. Barnes hands you the bombs.
Right. Barnes bombs. Do you have a favorite Zelda-like? Highland Gamer says, my favorite Zelda-like? I don't know too many. I'd go with Skyrim as a Zelda-like towards Breath of the Wild. I love the open world bits and the freedom to do whatever you want, whenever you want. The large variety of enemies and all the characters is amazing. For so many of the characters, they make elaborate backstories similar to Majora's Mask, and I love that side of it. You know, now that he just says that, it's something I never really thought about, is the fact that all the characters in Skyrim, they have a schedule, right?
Yeah.
And you can learn their schedule, and you can follow them around. You can do all this, and they do kind of loop. We don't actually, like, reset time necessarily, but these characters do move on a loop.
Yeah.
Very similar to Majora's Mask.
Yeah, that's true. Those Todd Howard RPGs, they kind of have characters that are on loops and stuff. So, yeah.
Imagine if you could, like, freely kill any character in Majora's Mask.
Just end it.
Ah, I got too dark. That got
all right,
too dark.
All right. Yeah, I was going to say, Breath of the Wild probably takes a lot of inspiration from Skyrim. Just ubiquitous, it was everywhere. And I'm sure they looked at that a lot.
What was the saying for it when it was being talked about? Like, you see that mountain there? You can climb it?
Yeah.
That was their whole thing.
Yeah, we said that a lot in Breath of the Wild, too. We made that joke.
But we were like, yeah. And we were like, oh, yeah, we went there, and it was amazing. You know?
Yeah.
We didn't, and it was fun to get there. We didn't have to glitch through it like in Skyrim. But, yeah, I love Skyrim, too. It's up there as an all-time favorite for me, for sure.
Let's play that.
It's a big game. It's a real big game.
I have it on Switch. That's an undertaking.
I mean, altogether, I've probably put in 200 hours into that game. Never beat it.
Yeah.
But I have spent more time in that game than most other video games. I mean, I would say maybe Final Fantasy 14 is probably the game I spent the most time on.
That's expected.
Yeah, you have to with those kind of games. Anyway... thank you, Highland Gamer. Highland Gamer joined in at the Sheikah supporter tier, which is the $5 a month tier that we have that gets you week early access to games. It gets you the chance to make us play a video game that you want us to play, and you can choose to play it with us if you want, or you can just watch us play it over in our Discord. We do that once a month.
Community Day.
Yeah, so far we've only really been playing the Rogue Heroes game, But I think we're wrapping up on there, and we're probably going to be looking into something else. I think Hylian Gamer's got some ideas of some stuff that he would like to play with us.
That was that Rogue Heroes game is a lot of fun. Also, Hylian Gamer did get me to play Fortnite. I had to download it for the first time in like 4 years. And then we just rolled on some fools. We got three first play, three victory royales, excuse me, and a second place. So yeah, he certainly carried me. I got my headshots in there, but he certainly is damn good at that game. So these are the kinds of things you expect to do if you join the $5 Sheikah supporter level at Patreon.com.
And if you join. And if you choose to join our dollar a month tier, you can get ad-free episodes. You can get your shout-outs like Hylian Gamer did this episode. You also get special access to different rooms in our Discord, as well as some other privileges and things like that. Oh, I forgot to mention, the Sheikah supporter tier also does get a sticker every time we update some graphics. We'll put that out on our Patreon. There's a little fine print at the bottom. You have to be a member for 3 months. And all that stuff. But as we go on, as we create new graphics and artwork, we're going to be putting those on stickers. And if you're in the Sheikah supporter tier, you'll just get those in the mail. They'll just show up one day. It's like magic. So again, thank you, Hylian Gamer. Thank you so much, listeners.
Thank you, patrons.
Thank you, patrons. Absolutely. Let's get back to the show. All right, so we're back in the field. It still isn't looking good, but we have a new move to use. We go back to the tree in the middle. We use our bloom technique on this thing, and that reawakens this, and we get another beautiful cutscene of everything just coming back to life and being green and pink and beautiful. It's great.
Yes.
This opens up a big field with a number of things to do. Now, you can go back to the village from before, but if you do, Isun is like, hey, there's some other stuff to do here, man. Like, I don't know if you want to go back there right now, which, to be honest, I don't understand why he's saying this, because this isn't anything that's necessarily moving the story ahead. It'd be one thing if it was blocking us off to keep us from going to the next area because we haven't gotten the item that we need yet that's in this town, but it's weird that he's like warning us not to go back yet, because if we do go back there, we basically just have a challenge to make all of those cherry blossoms bloom. What we can do is, with the help of Mr. Orange, is bring back the tree in the town, and that gives Sakia her full power back. So if you go and do that, I assume both of you guys did this.
No, not at first. I only went back because I wanted to make sure, because I had a lot of money and I wanted to make sure I had enough different kinds of food offerings from the merchant. But yeah, he was just like, Isun was like, look, dude, like, you shouldn't advance the story. And I'm like, advancing what? Like, no, I just want to find the merchant. But yeah, you walk through and the whole place looks different, and yeah.
Yeah. I explored around until Eason's like, okay, you've done enough. You can go back to the village now. And that was that was when I actually went back and restored the village and got to watch Mr. Orange bust a groove.
Dude.
Mm-hmm.
The Yoho Kano or Yoho, Kano Shuffle. He talks it up, because I didn't understand at this point that you could circle the dead husks of trees, because I tried plenty of times and I just didn't do the circle right. And so I was like, well, there must be a different way to bring those back. And so, yeah, I eventually came to understand that that is what I needed to do many hours later. And but talking to the people in this town about this dance, it's very the vapors, like, ooh.
We go up and we help him out do his dance, and that fully reawakens it. We then see Sakia, and she is basically just wearing like a single towel around her now at this point. For some reason, she had a wardrobe change and is like, she's so far away too. Like, I get the feeling when they first made this, she was right in front of us, like, just barely wearing anything. And they were like, yeah, we can't do this. We got to, like, move her real far away because she's just, this is being, you're bumping this up to an M now, like, just in this moment.
So, in this scene, I got the impression they were trying to insinuate that, you know, she had kind of been reborn or revitalized because now she's much thinner and skinnier, not as voluptuous, but it's still like way over sexualized. And with as cool as the character design is in the rest of this game, this just feels odd, a little icky.
For the longest time, every Japanese video game was very horny.
Yeah.
Now they got their own genre, so they can get all their horniness out through that kind of stuff. Like, there is just a genre of horny games now. So, like, you could just make you can make those games, and if that's the game you want to make, you can get it off your chest there.
So to speak, yes.
But, yes. But for a long time, it was constant, and it sucks. It sucks that, like, you know, the first female character that we've been, like, properly introduced to, the first one, there were these maidens that would be sacrificed, and we had no choice, and the only thing that stopped it was a man came in and saved it. And it's like we were started off with that trope, and then the first, like, woman that we meet that is guiding us through is just sexualized the whole time. It's really disappointing, but at the same time, every game was like this back then. And we've learned from that. We've grown from that. We've matured in a way where you can still have a game like Bayonetta, where you can have a character that's very sexy, but she owns her own identity, right? Like, it's just done in a completely different way now. But this is still like, yeah, it's disappointing. It's gross. And fortunately, we kind of get to move on from it from here, though.
I do like that we didn't really talk about too much about it's the Konohana is the name of the tree. And so the dance that Mr. Orange has been alluding to this whole time is the Konohana shuffle. And in order to do this, he holds up the Sake of Valor and says, but first I must break my vow of temperance. So he hasn't done this in years, and he has sworn a vow of sobriety, and but he describes it as gingerly sip this sake and soon we shall see blossoms, and then proceeds to pull out a big old jug, drink the whole damn thing, get turnt, and dude, Legend of Drunken Master levels of, like, these are moves pulled straight out of, you know, Drunken Master technique from either the movie or either of the movies, or just this is how Drunken Master technique is done. It is an amazing dance. I loved every second of this. He
blacks out.
He breathes in the dog's face, and dog's just like, oh god.
Yes. I love that. Yes.
I wasn't expecting, like, this at all, because when you talk to him before and he does his initial dance, it's this straight up B-boy breakdance setup where he's like doing spins on the ground and popping and locking, and then suddenly it transitions to Drunken Master, and that's when it gets truly funky. So
You're about to see the stuff of legends, kid. Are you ready for this?
So when we do this, we get a whole bunch of praise. Have you guys been focusing on anything for your leveling up? I think we've only really been able to level up like 3 times so
ink.
Far.
Yeah,
ink,
I did I did health, ink, health is what I've done so far.
I think I did ink, health, ink. I think I put 1 in health because I'm like, I'm doing fine right now on health, you know?
Yeah, we're not getting hit very much. That was my rationale for, like, eventually, since the first health one was 50, I hit that, but I leveled up Ink 3 times and then got like a smattering of praise that got me to 50 to be like, yeah, that's enough. I can do that real quick.
Right. So I just wanted to get this part out of the way because it doesn't really do anything for our story overall. Mm-hmm. It is sort of just like a side thing that you could have gone back to. We didn't get a new brush technique doing this.
Oh,
it was.
We do. I thought we got. We do get a new brush technique afterwards because for whatever reason, after Saki is restored and can speak to us again, the second of the monkey gods shows up in the sky and gives us the ability to create lily pads.
This is why Isun told us not to come here, is because we can learn a new technique, and he wanted us to explore.
Yep, that's right. I totally spaced that.
That's our, yeah.
Right. Well, you get the lily pad technique here, which we will need to use to get into the area that we're going to.
I just wanted to buy some seeds,
that
man.
That was it.
I just wanted to feed some little piggies and stuff, you know?
Well, there is a merchant right by the main tree of the
which I found later.
Yeah.
So I didn't know that. I figured, you know, in very typical, you know, like, RPG fashion, I was like, I need to go back to the last town I was at, buy some stuff, head on out, and they were very adamant about it not being time for that.
So in the field, we have a few things that we can do here. One is finding these old shrines that if you run through them, it starts a battle.
Like devil.
If you do that, the shrine disappears. Shrines. And these things are scary looking too, yeah. Right? Like, they just have this like black and green glow to them. They're just like oozing dark ectoplasm or whatever off of there.
Kind of phantom toll booth.
Yeah. you run through the middle of it and it starts a battle. You fight a wave or two of enemies.
Yeah, they're harder.
It clears it up.
Battles usually.
Yeah. Clears it out. You get a bunch of praise. Sometimes there's animals there. You feed the animals, get some more praise.
Makes things very pretty. Yeah.
Yes. One of them, you do that, and it opens up the like kiln that the nameless man used over there, or the forge that he had over there. So I think there might be something later on that you'll talk with him, and he's going to give you something if you've already freed that for him. One of the other things that you can do is you can go do some training.
Yeah.
There is a dojo that you can go to and you can learn some moves.
This was very entry level. We are still in the tutorial of the game level moves. They are teaching you that this move house exists, and here are some very basic things you can learn.
Right.
Hey, you want to dodge? I hope you got 10K to learn how to dodge.
Yes. I kept trying to dodge at the beginning of the game, and I'm like,
"What?
Did they not let you dodge in this game? Like, how is there a Kamiya game and you can't dodge?" then you get to here, and it's like you can dodge with the right trigger now if you pay up, which I did. I made sure I went and grinded for a little bit. Got some money for it, got some treasures, made sure I got this one. And then also you can turn up your regular attack to a 4-hit combo mm-hmm. with the mirror. You can also buy moves for a weapon we don't have yet.
I wasn't able to buy them. It was just like, look, they're right here. You can't have it.
Sure, he'll have them there, yeah. So really, you just want to get those two moves. Now, Brian, what happens at the start of each of these moves?
Well, let me tell you what. He drops his head down, which transforms his face into a thing where it looks like it's got a big V on his head. And then he does a series of spins and cool poses and moves. And it's the exact same animation as Beautiful Joe when he first goes into his transforms into what will be known as Beautiful Joe. He spends the whole game trying to come up with his cool superhero name, but that is the Beautiful Joe transformation, down to the fact that the V pops up onto his head, and that was great.
He's just short of saying Henshin a go-go,
yeah,
baby,
basically,
right? Like that was the only thing that he was missing on there. When that popped up, I was like, oh, Brian's gonna be so happy to see this.
It was great.
Because you had no idea they were throwing these kind of references.
No. I mean, I was like, that makes sense that you'd reuse the juice as the ink bottles. But, I was happy to see it. And then, when I saw it, I'm like, all right, cool. We're good. We're good here. This is good.
Another character we can run into is a mailman in this field.
Wait, really?
Which is almost identical to the mailman that we're familiar with in Zelda.
He's just kind of
he runs in a similar way
on the side of the road. And I had gotten this item. I had picked up a few of them, and I tried using one and just to see what would happen. And I reloaded my save because I thought maybe it would be a level up material or something like that, but that didn't end up being the case. So I reloaded to get it back, but one of them I gave to him, and that made him happy, and he got back up and ran off, I guess you could call what he's doing running.
It is a very strange, like he is almost laying on his stomach, but still with his feet planted to the ground, like running, swimming sort of thing. It is a strange looking thing, but he just runs laps around the field just like the mailman does in Zelda. It's interesting that they just like, why they just both happen to have this in here. And I feel like that has to be a Zelda nod, right?
Yeah.
Like having the first big field that you come to has a mailman that runs in circles through here. Yeah. I don't know.
So we also need to find a pyrotechnist.
This is always the issue. I knew what I needed to do. Is there something that leads you to being like, you need to go do this? The bomb is completely optional, isn't it?
So the bomb is not optional. I don't think. I think the bomb's not optional because you need it in the coming section to get into the forest. But what happens is if you go over to the entrance of the forest, you will, right next to it, there's a big area where you can see that there's, I think you can like regenerate the ground with bloom. And then you see that there's a big crack in the ground. And Eason's basically like, I think we could break this open with a huge explosion. And when I saw that, my thought was, okay, we're going to use this to blow open like a fountain that's going to refill the water so that we can take the ferry to the forest.
That was my thought process as well.
And so as soon as I saw that, I just thought, okay, got to find a bomb. And then I saw the sign that said the pyrotechnists. I knew we're going to blow some stuff up.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Pyrotechnist, by the way, I really love that term. It's really good.
Super pyrotechnist, to be
exact. Yeah.
Yes.
His full title is pretty great.
Yeah. So Tama, he just makes bombs. And you get into there, and I love this, where the only room in this house, half of the screen is taken up by this diagram of a circle with a line through it in the same like black paint that you use for everything.
I still missed it.
really?
Yeah. Did not know what was supposed to happen. He takes a big old pole off the pipe and uses that to throw into his little pot where he wants this firework show to go off, basically. And he's like, huzzah! And nothing happened for me because I didn't know what I was supposed to draw.
I get into that room and I just immediately start drawing that symbol. I'm like, right, I need to learn it first. Like, I keep skipping a step. And so you got to talk to him. And he just like, this was strange because it feels like you were wrapping up a quest that you never started with him, where he's just sort of like, all right, time to do the bombs. I'm going to show you how to do the bombs now. Let's go toss them in. And then you sit there. You do a circle with a little stem coming out of it that is just like the the wick of the bomb, or what do they call that? They call it a different thing.
The fuse,
if you will.
The fuse of the bomb. And that will create a big bomb there. And then
named
we get this cutscene.
Midnight Wonder Boy.
Yes.
Midnight Wonder Boy.
And all, like, the entire time I was like, Midnight Wonder Boy is such a great name for a terrible band, but Tenacious D almost certainly has that copyrighted. So
right. We do that. We get a beautiful scene, fireworks going off. Again, so much of this stuff feels like it's happening real fast. Like, we're meeting these new people, getting these new things, because when this happens, we happen to see a new constellation. And when we do that, we get to meet Bakugami.
It's okay. This took me forever to do all of this stuff. It was all fast but spread out. And so, yeah, I didn't feel like I was learning too much at once, because I was taking a while to do all this.
Okay.
Bakugami is the best. He is my favorite. He is the best god that we have met so far. He is the cutest, and he has these little followers who are these adorable little boars. I love it.
Borlets.
But Bakugami is balancing on a bomb,
mm-hmm.
surrounded by little borlets with matches in
with
their
torches,
mouth,
lit
torches in their mouth, and they just want to be near their parent, and they're just like, no, get away from me, and they keep just like running away.
He's balancing on this ball, almost falls off, and then one of the piglet lights the fuse, and he just like has to bend over real fast, like blows it out. It was great. It was
then
absolutely
we just
great.
Cut to the conversation with Amy, and at the end of it, they're just like, all right, anyway, and then they accidentally light it. They run off. There's an explosion off to the side, and then we see their, like, symbol, their glowing symbol, rolling on the floor and just rolls into Annie. And just like normally it's this, like, elegant thing where it's they transform into it, and it floats through the air, mm-hmm. and it gets absorbed into us. And this one is just, like, they got blown off screen. And then they're just rolling into it.
When, as the four piglets holding matches go running after.
Did either of you talk to Mika?
Yes.
Who gives you the list of, harder enemies to kill.
Yeah.
So this is, there's an area that you can go down into that takes you to the moon cave. This is where everything went down previously. If you go down this way, it just looks real creepy, but eventually you hit a force field and you can't do anything about it. That's the end of it. If you go on your way back, there is a little house at the entrance there where the priest of the moon shrine, Mika, is waiting. And Mika just basically says, like, there are a bunch of cursed enemies out there that I need you to slay. Here's a list of them. They only show up at night.
Well,
and then as soon as you leave the house, one of them will fight you.
Well, the days are much too bright, yes. But one of the... actually, what he says is, hey, I'm having problems. There's five of these guys out there that I've tried to get rid of, and they're bad business. And can you go hang this list up somewhere so a hero will see it and take them out for me? And
here, doggy.
Yeah, here. Be a good dog and go put this somewhere. Somewhere where, you know, find a telephone pole and, you know, with a band poster flyer on it and tape it over it. And Easton's like, I bet we could just hold on to this. And I was like, yeah, I'm a million miles ahead of you, Easton. Chill out.
So with that, we have bombs. We have lily pads. We can bomb the ground. We can bomb some walls. We can get some more treasure. We can do all that.
Ethan also,
is there anything else we're missing?
Wants you, once you take out each of these guys, to cross their name off on the list. Doing this with the motion controls. No. It has to be like a perfectly straight line. And not necessarily like be like hold my arm to like make a straight line or something.
Yeah,
but
I ain't doing that.
Like
doing
it was, it took me forever to do the first one, forever, and eventually I got it. And then subsequent ones, once I kind of got the feeling of it, it was a little bit easier, but the first one was bad. Doing the dance with Mr. Orange took a very long time because I'm getting better at doing the circles, but if they're not connected at the right spot, or I've taken to making large spirals that connect or the walls will cross, because that has become the most consistent way for me to get that. But that shuffle took me a long time, and I just stopped and went to bed and woke up and tried again in the morning. Because you can't...
Brian, switch to sticks.
You can't in the middle of the dance unless you turn the game off and restart it.
Turn the game off and just switch it and don't go back to motion.
Well, I eventually got through it, but drawing the straight line and doing the circle for that dance were really rough, but everything else so far has been okay. It's not taking away too much enjoyment, so.
But you could take away no enjoyment.
Right.
This game was made originally without any motion control.
Right.
Like, we don't actually need to do any of that with this game. It actually works pretty well with just the stick.
Yeah, yeah.
So, we have bombs. We got lily pads. These are traversal items, I will call them. Very similar to the kind of stuff that we get in Zelda. I guess that's what I'm really equating this to. Like, in Zelda, typically we would have to, like, go through a dungeon before we'd get one of these things. And we've gotten four, basically, now. Like, four, like, different things between, like, the slash that opens doors, lily pads that let us, like, walk on water, basically, and then bombs that, like, open up things. Like, the bloom is, like, one thing. Bloom just affects that. It doesn't necessarily help us, like, get around, per se, other than advancing whatever story we have here. But yeah, we've already gotten three, basically, of these things now. What did I say, three or four? I don't remember.
Four.
We've got these things now. And so is there anything else in the field that we wanted to bring up before we wrap up here?
I think, you know, going back to Twilight Princess, this is a very long tutorial area. It is not necessarily paced well, but, like, it is definitely, like, I like it better. I didn't notice. I was having fun just getting used to the world. It was fine as a, and I'm still into, you're still in the tutorial. You're still learning about things, but I was having a lot of fun with it. So there's another comparison to the other Wolf Zelda game is, we're still setting you up, man. The game hasn't opened up yet.
The only thing I would add is you can feed a horse.
So yeah.
Yes.
That's cool.
You can feed, like, so many animals in this, and it's just, like, part of it. And it's just, but it's not even important. But you want to do it. You mm-hmm. feel inclined to do it. You get the tiniest reward for doing it.
Very little praise. But
including just getting hearts above their head after you do
and
it.
And they run up to you, and they're like, hi, how's it going? Did you make sure to feed the dog in town that whose record we usurped? Because you
not
can
yet. I'm gonna go back for that so. One.
You can make the dog happy because now it has to beat a record. Its record got broken, so you know. But I was like, later I realized, oh, I could probably give it a snack and it would be happy. And sure enough, yes, you can.
Mm-hmm. So there's a little area. There's a little river that goes under a cave.
It's like
and
yeah, there was a pier before that a ferry would come to.
Did I miss something, or do we just have to keep drawing so many lily pads to get across?
I drew them as far away from me as I possibly could and swam long distances to each lily pad so that I didn't necessarily have to draw a million of them. So far, lily pads have been pretty easy. I've never had one mess up on me when drawing those circles.
So we put a bunch of lily pads down this river. At the end of it, there's a wall you can climb up, and there's a crack in there that you can bomb it. And that takes us into Agata Forest. This area is also cursed like before.
Mm-hmm.
If you go into the entrance, you jump down, there's a little cave in there with a spooky looking hut, and there is a safe station right there just go to that save station, and this is where we're going to wrap up this episode. For the next episode, we are going to be defeating the Spider Queen in the Suta Ruins.
Of course.
So this sounds like a real dungeon. We're going to be fighting a boss. It's going to be real interesting. Hopefully. Trigger warning for people that don't like spiders.
Yeah, I can't imagine that there are many people on this podcast who don't like fighting giant spiders.
Do all that. Save some people. Save the land. Make it beautiful. Me back here, and we will talk about it on Chat of the Wild.
Guide in.
Guide.